Mastermind Agent is proud to present Success Calls. Top real estate agents from across North America reveal their success secrets, strategies, and systems in up-close and personal interviews. You can find all the calls at www.mastermindagent.com.
Hi, I'm Mike Cerrone with Mastermind Agent. This month's top agent is Mike Parker with Huff Realty in Florence, Kentucky. Last year, he closed 97 transactions with a total sales volume of $14 million. His average sales price was $142,000, of which 56% were buyers and 44% were sellers. He operates a team with 9 members, 5 team agents, 1 operations manager, 1 virtual assistant, 1 courier, and 1 team leader. Mike Parker is the team leader of the Mike Parker team. He's been an agent for 28 years. In his best year, Mike and his team sold 181 homes. In his career, Mike sold over 2,300 homes by himself and over 3,000 homes with his team. In this call, Mike talks about why getting burned in an electrical explosion and sitting in a burn unit for 57 days was the best thing that ever happened to him. How he generates over 75% of his business by repeat and referrals from his past clients and sphere of influence. Why he uses the term team agent instead of buyer agent. How to get back up after getting knocked down. How to recover from a painful divorce. How to stay proactive and beat depression. A simple way to track trends in the general economy that may affect your local real estate market. A simple daily habit that will result in 48 closings per year. His 25th annual Santa Claus event that results in a 10-to-1 ROI. Team dynamics, compensation, profit margins, and more. Welcome to the call, Mike.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me on today. I deeply appreciate it.
Hey, Mike. It's great to have you here. Mike, before we talk about what you're doing now, let's go back for a minute and talk about what you did before you got into real estate.
Two things. I've lived a couple of different lives. I grew up on a farm, and I was a farm boy and was a pretty good jock. And we didn't have football at our school, but we had basketball and baseball, which I was very good at. And in our neck of the woods, softball was very large. And I ended up playing softball for 19 years at a pretty high level. And we actually played in 38 states. I played with a lot of traveling teams. We won quite a few state tournaments, national tournaments, and, you know, from that, I worked at a power plant for approximately 6 years, and during that time, I got hurt in an industrial accident back in May 1st of 84. A piece of equipment blew up in front of me. I had a 4160 breaker blow, and I spent 57 days in a burn unit and 2 years in a rehab. And believe it or not, that's probably the best thing that ever happened to me. It got me out of the power plant, and in a roundabout way, got me into real estate. So,
wow, 2 years of recovery. What brought you out of that, and why did you decide to go into real estate?
That's kind of a funny thing. Jeff Smith is a good friend of mine, and I played a lot of softball with over the years before I got into real estate and after. Jeff played golf a couple days a week. He played softball 3 nights a week. You know, he traveled on the weekends with us and everything. And I'm going, you know what? This guy's got a good life. You know, he really does. Well, what I didn't know at the time getting into the business, he had been in the business over 10 years and already had built up his, you know, past clients and his sphere of influence and everything. And he had a lot of business coming to him already. And when I got into it, you know, that first year and a half, I was like, wait a minute, how come Jeff's getting all this business and I'm not getting any business? And, you know, it was an eye-opening experience. 1988 was the first year I went to NAR, National Association of Realtor Conference, in the November conference. And I have been to every one except for year before last. I missed one. I missed 2012 because I was on the operating table getting my back fused when that was going on. But I've been to 24 out of the last 25 years. And that was really the beginning of me to grow. Back in 1988, if you did it, there was very few people. I mean, very few people doing 100 units. And I remember seeing Phil Herman and Steve Westmark and Ralph Roberts and Alan Dom all up on a panel there. Bill Barrett was doing the panel. And that's where I met Brenton. That's where I met Bill Barrett. I met Pat Zabe at that conference. And it was a life-changing experience. And what I did was I started doing my education outside the area. I'm in a very conservative market where agents don't do training. Still to this day, they don't do training. And I would do 15 to 20 days a year around the country. I'll go learn what somebody else is doing, and I'll bring it back. I was the first one to use a brochure box here. I was the first one with a personal assistant, first one with a website. I learned it somewhere else, brought it back into play, and it's helped keep me on the cutting edge.
Mike, how long have you been in real estate? How many years has it been?
28 years, and I'll be starting 29 here in the next month or so.
How many homes did you sell last year?
Last year we did 97. In the opening there, you talked about a 9-member team. That's all brand new. I've had some health issues, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But Ray Straub and myself, we did 95% of that 97 units. We lost Ray this year. Ray moved to Florida. His wife got an unbelievable job in Florida, and they took that and took a position, and he's now selling real estate in Boca Raton and quite happy. He's doing quite well. It was his second year in the business. He did 39 closings with us, and we were very proud of that. I'm very proud of Ray and still are proud of Ray. With my health issues, being a former jock, my bones are breaking and everything like that. In 2012, I had a right knee replaced, a left hip replaced, a back fuse, and then the hip got recalled. And, you know, the 4 out of the last 5 years, I've missed 3 months or more just because of medical issues. I'm hoping now that we're starting to see the light and those things are gone. But I just came out 2 weeks ago. I had a... somehow, I'm not sure how I did it, but I ruptured my patella tendon, and I had knee surgery 2 weeks ago this past Monday. And I was actually pre-op meeting with my doc, post-op with my doc yesterday. Knock on wood, everything's going good. I'm out on my brace and got the staples out, and everything's going. But, you know, 95% of those 97 units was 2 people. Starting last August, we started recruiting. I could tell that I'm not going to be able to do the amount of business I've done in the past, especially with buyers, with my legs the way they are. So we are in the process of hiring people. I have brought 4 people on. I brought 5 people on. 4 out of the 5 are newbies, less than a year's experience in the business. And 2 of them brand spanking new. So it's been entertaining, been fun. It's been a lot of fun, but entertaining. Mel, you'll hear me talk about Mel, Melanie Sullivan. She's my right hand. She's been with me 17 years. Jill Coogley has been with me 11 years. Jill worked full-time in the office, went home to have kids, and lives home on a family farm now. And she works as a VA. She's an independent contractor, and she works about 30 hours a week, and she does all our internet marketing. Mel's my right hand in the office here. She's been with me 17 years. I'm going on 18 starting October. And, you know, she is my right hand. She's sometimes my right and left hand. And, we're happy where we are. We're growing. We're 94 units closed year to date. We figure we just put a goal from September 1st to December 31st to 60 closed units. Personal opinion, that's low. I'm shooting more for my personal idea. I'm shooting for 75. I've got a personal goal to list 36 residential single families during that time. You know, it's real estate's a numbers game. But with the young ones we've got here, and they're all different ages, they're anywhere from... the youngest is probably 30, 31. The oldest is probably 72. But we do real estate the right way. And, you know, we have a servant mentality. And I'm a firm believer, if a person doesn't have a servant mentality in this business, they're not going to last. You've got to have a servant mentality in real estate to last. Now, I've seen quite a few agents come in the business and be flash in the pan, last 3-4 years, and then gone. But the ones who last, the ones who do well, have that servant mentality.
How many homes did you sell in your best year?
Best year was 181. That would have been 2005. I mean, you'll kind of get to know me. I'm a little bit of a numbers person. 2005, our board is back then was about 1,200 agents. Today, it's about 800. In 2005, we closed 6,200 residential units in the Board of Realtors. That covers 7 counties. I am located in northern Kentucky, which is straight across the river from Cincinnati. The Cincinnati airport is inside northern Kentucky. I did that year, I closed 181 units with 144 of them being just me. I had a builder that I was representing at that time, and we closed, I believe it was 32 units, over 300,000 we were building. We were rocking and a-rolling. I mean, I learned a few lessons over the years. You learn a lot of lessons, actually. But, you know, I never paid close attention to, you know, numbers and what you were grossing and things like that. I mean, I had a bookkeeper and everything, but I really didn't pay. And it cost me that year. When I say pennies, I truly mean we were pennies short of grossing $1 million. That year. I mean, it was at the end of the year, that was like January 4th or 5th, I'm looking at numbers, and I said, you've got to be kidding me. I mean, we were pennies short. And I was like, I'm going back through. You sure that we don't have a check that didn't we haven't cashed yet or something like it? You know, and it's just, you know, so. But, you know, that that happened. But, I mean, it's, you know, you learn. I mean, I've learned from different other agents that I mastermind with. You know, you meet with a bookkeeper once a week. And, you know, like Alan Dom. Alan, for the people who don't know who Alan Dom is, he's probably been out of the last 20 years, 15 of those years, the top agent in the United States. He only works in downtown Philadelphia. He has a niche market. Very sharp man. Extremely brilliant man. But, you know, I remember him more than once. Howard Brenton from Star Power would interview him, and he said, Alan, who would be the first person you would hire? And he always said the same thing, my bookkeeper, my accountant. That would be my first hire. And back then, I really, you know, you're not making any money. You go, well, I'm not making any money. Why do I need a bookkeeper? You know, that's when you get your system set up, you know. And, you know, I've had the privilege, or not the privilege, whatever you want to look at, to have the IRS fight. And if you've been in this business long enough, you're going to get audited. And I've been audited a couple of times, and I'm a little hard-headed. So, you know, we've had multi-years where we've gone head-to-head with them. And the first time was a nightmare, but the second time we were ready for them. We had our system set up, and, you know, our accountants were set up, and, you know, we were good. But it's, you know, having that bookkeeper, meet with them weekly, have a budget, know where you are. If you're brand new to the business, you know, you're going to spend more out of your gross on marketing than you are if you are been in the business like I have for a period of time, because you're just going to have more past clients, more sphere of influence who are going to remember you and going to contact you. But, you know, you need to know what your numbers are and, you know, at all times. And because when this is a market that can change, you know, real estate is not a battleship like an aircraft carrier where it takes forever to turn around. You know, if you get one company, a major employer in a small market leaves, guess what? Your market just changed real quick overnight. And you need to be able to move with that.
Well, Mike, how many homes have you sold in your entire career?
It's over 2,500. If you count team, if you do the team and everything, it's over 3,000. Myself personally, Mel and I was trying to figure this out here about 3 months ago. You know, we believe it's right around the 2,500 mark. I know for a fact it's over 2,300, but it's the pre-RMLS is good back to the fourth quarter of 94. And then from that is a previous MLS that we have no records. We had to go through the old MLS books. And we're actually got somebody doing that for us. I've got a temp that who's doing some numbers for me, going back and tracking some stuff. But, you can safely say 2,300 plus and be correct.
Mike, you said that you're in Florence, Kentucky, and you started to tell us a little bit about where that is. Sounds like it's northern Kentucky and just south of Cincinnati, but also sounds like you might be in a rural area. Could you kind of describe your area to us? Is it urban or suburban or rural? And also, what is the population there?
Okay. I'm probably the only agent that really works the market area. There are other agents who work some of the markets I do, but I cover about a 65-mile radius area from the Ohio River is the Mason-Dixon line. And when you come into Covington, Kentucky, from that bridge, which is the Brent Spence Bridge, from that bridge, I go down to Carroll and Owen counties. And that's about a 65-mile one way. I'm from that area. I'm from Gallatin County, Warsaw. That's the rural area, extremely rural. 80% of the population works in a farm-type community. I also work urban, and I also work the suburbs. Boone County is where the airport is, extremely suburbs. Almost, 67% of the county is suburbs. The planning and zoning has set aside 33% of the county never to be built in suburbs, and it's more of a rural setting. But, Boone County itself in 1990 was 40,000 people. In 2000, it was around 96,000. Right now, it's about 125,000. Most people think of northern Kentucky as three counties. It's actually seven. But when you take the top three counties, it's about 400,000 people. And it's urban and suburban for the most part. Boone, Kent, and Campbell all have a little bit of a rural area, but not much. You get below that, you got your Grant, Gallatin, and Owen, which are your farms area. I always carry an extra set of clothes in the car because I don't wear suit and tie, but I will wear a nice slacks and a long sleeve shirt, business shirt. That's the kind of work I'm in today. And there's a rest area south of Florence, 5 miles south, and numerous times I pulled off the side of it, take my clothes into the restroom and change into jeans and a flannel. When I go into Gallatin, Owen, or Carroll, I'm in jeans. I don't pull into that county in dress slacks. You need to dress like them. You need to talk like them. I've gotten many farms and I've listed and things like that because I am one of them. When you're in the urban area and you're dealing with a P&G exec, Procter & Gamble executive who's transferring out, you need to be dressed like he or she does. So, I keep an extra set of clothes in the car just whatever which way I'm going. And I kind of like that. It kind of keeps me on sharp on our toes. We have three major builders here. Dries and Fisher are building in like 8 or 10 other cities, but they're headquartered here. Arling House Builders is another builder here. And those three builders have probably built in the last 20, 25 years, 75% of the homes here. And they're track builders. It's kind of nice to, once you get to know the floor plans and you pull into a subdivision, whether it's a Madison or a Mason floor plan or a Hampton 1, 2, or 3. And, you can, it's like the phone call came in one day and I was interviewing against two other agents and the guy called in. I said, I live in Hempstead. And I said, really? I said, do you know what floor plan you have? And he said, no, sir, I don't. I said, is your garage on the right or the left? He said, it's on the right. I said, side entry, correct? And he goes, yes, sir. I said, do you have a two-story great room? He goes, yes. I said, on the left side of the great room, do you have a study and a living room? He goes, yes, yeah, study's in the back, living room's in front. I said, on the right's the dining room, then the kitchen's off to the side. He goes, yeah. I said, is the master over top of the living room and the study? He goes, actually, it is. I said, you've got a Madison floor plan. And he goes, how do you know that? I said, well, I know the plans and things like that. And he says, that's good. He said, I'll cancel the other two appointments. By knowing the market and by knowing the floor plans, it's like when I get brand new agents who come to work for me, the first thing they do is they go out to the builders and they get a three-ring binder and they get their floor plans. Because, the builder will have, like Dries has got like 27, 28 plans. But they got five or six that they built 75% of the time. And, you get to know those plans, like a Dries Glasgow. I think it's been built over 1,000 times inside the greater Cincinnati market in over a 20-year period. There's different variations of it, but the plan, the main plan, is still the main plan. And, you know, once you kind of get to know that is, and when you're working with a buyer, especially an out-of-town buyer, you walk up, now this is going to be a Dries Glasgow. What we want to pay attention to is the breakfast area in the back, because if they didn't do the bay window in the back, all of a sudden, guess what, that dining area is going to be short. And you walk in, and the house is exactly like you said, and it doesn't have that bay window. Oh, I see which is exactly what you're talking about. You know, this is too short a distance right here. That bay would have really been nice on this. Well, guess what? All of a sudden, they got confidence in you knowing what you're talking about.
That's knowing your inventory.
It is. It's knowing your inventory and knowing your product. It's, as I tell new agents when I get into business, if you've ever been in a really nice dress shop, a lady goes into a really nice dress shop, and she walks in, and you know, that person who has got the, who's working in the shop is sizing you up. I walked in a really nice suit shop the other day, and I've lost already 60 pounds in the last 60, 75 days. And a guy goes in, you're what, a 50 long, 52 long? I said, 50 right now, but I said, you know, we're looking to get down a little bit. I explained what a surgery I had and everything. But he knew exactly coming in, knew where I was. He walked me straight over to the wall where the 50 to 52 longs were. And guess what? You know, that's just knowing the product. And then all of a sudden, guess what? He's not fumbling around. Oh, this is a 42. Let me see. Where's a 48? Where's a 50s at? He walked me straight to that wall. I've got confidence in him now. And that is, for a newer agent, that is when you're working with a client, especially on the listing side, by knowing the product, knowing the inventory. Is your market short on inventory right now? Is it long on inventory? It's, you know, there, and it's very easy to do. Your MLS gives you those numbers. It's just looking it up.
And Mike, give us some of those numbers in your market now. What's your average price, average days on the market? Are the prices trending up, down, or flat?
In 2012, we were about $145 as an average sales price. And in 2013, it went to $154. 2013, we closed right at 5880, I think it was, in number of single-family condo and farms, which actually is the third best year ever. 2005 was 6200, 2006 was 6000, and then last year was like 5880. Right now, this year, we're right on track. We got our January and February this year was extremely cold and snowy. So we were behind the eight ball starting out first quarter. We caught up in June. Our August closings this year are a little bit slower than last year's. So we're about 100 homes short. But I feel comfortable in saying that we're going to close 5,900 this year, which will make it the third best year. Our average sales price is down a little bit. We're running around that 149, 150 number right now. And you know, what's amazing to me, and this, I never have figured this one out, our days on the market are always long here. Our best days on the market in back in 2005 was still 90 days average. Right now, we're averaging around 110 to 115 days on the market. And, you know, it's average sales price right now is running 149, 150. And, you know, that's the average, and I'm comfortable with that. I like that type of market. 2005, it was 180. Things were getting overpriced, you know, and it's, I actually had an office of about 2,700 square feet. I had the builder in with me and everything, and I actually closed that office. I was with the same company. I was an office outside of the main corporate office. And I closed that office in mid-2006. I could feel it coming. I'm not a negative person. I'm a positive person, but I'm very realistic. And it's like, we've had one hell of a run here. And, you know, this thing's going to change at some point. And then our marketplace got hit really hard with Delta. Delta filed bankruptcy, and then they merged in with Northwest. And, you know, we lost our hub here, which means we lost about 10,000 jobs. And then you put the downturn into that. Our market got rocked. And throw into that a divorce that you wasn't expecting. Seven, eight, and nine were not happy years, let's put it that way.
Well, Mike, Do you have a niche or a specialization in your market?
Yeah, there's actually a couple of different niches I've got there. I live in a townhome. 26 out of the last 28 years, I've lived in a townhome. I've sold more condos and townhomes than anybody else in Northern Kentucky. When you go to sell a townhome or a condo, it's not the same marketing plan. And if you're using the same marketing plan for 100% of all your properties, that's a big mistake. When you sell a condo or a townhome, is number one, you got to know what the difference is, okay, between a condo and a townhome. In different markets, it's different things, and different products are called different things in different markets. I'm only going to talk about my market here. Condo means somebody's above you or below you. A townhome means there's nobody above you or below you in my market. In other markets, it means other things, but here that's how we, what we say. You're selling a lifestyle. Like in the townhome market, like especially where I live, you don't see people outside that much. They hit that garage door, they pull in, or they walk through the garage, and they go inside and they stay inside. They're not outside people, from that. More of the condos, more of the apartment style where there's one entrance and there's doors off the hallways, you're seeing a lot more younger people. That is a lifestyle. You're selling a lifestyle when you do that. When you're selling a single family, you're selling more than a lifestyle from there. So, that's one niche I've got. Second is land and farms. I've been estate type settings. I was on three appointments this past week, and all three are one of them is a 4,000 or 5,000 square foot home with 200 acres, and we're talking about how we might break that up. Instead of making it a million plus, we know we might have one listing be $1.2 million, but one listing might be 750,000 with, X amount of acreage and stuff from there. And then also I have what is called my bread and butter. My bread and butter is the suburbs in Boone County. I believe that's the best place to live in Northern Kentucky, personally, and that's where I live myself. And, I focus in on about 12 neighborhoods. There's 40 neighborhoods in Boone County, but there's 12 that I like. With my health issues, and in the past, I've been a 50-50 agent, 50% buyer, 50% listing. I don't know if it's just because I'm getting older and things like that, and with the health issues. Next year, my plan is to make it more of a 75 to 80% listing. I've been very successful in years past of double dipping, where I have both buyer and seller. I'm really focusing more strongly on the listing side. With the new team that I'm building up here, the people, I'm giving them every lead. The only leads they don't get is on buyers if it's a past client of mine, past client, or if it's a spirit influence referral. And I've actually gave a few of those out to them from there. So, we're trying to take my knowledge. We're trying to work smarter. I got a good group right now. They listen. We do 2 to 3 hours training with them on Monday mornings. And, our goal is to get all four of the five, get them up to 36 units a year. Two of them will be close this year. The other two, hopefully we can get them up there next year to that. And if I've got four people doing 30 units plus, that's 120 units. I do my 50 units off my past clients and Spear. We do around 200 units. I'm happy with that.
You tell me, and make sure I got this right, but my understanding is last year, the majority of your business came from repeat and referral from your past clients and sphere of influence. And I think I added it up. It's somewhere around 80%. Does that sound right?
Yeah, that's about right. I would say you're probably around a 75, probably really close. The repeat and referral, people know me, know I'm not going to pester you. I'm not going to be calling you every week and things like that. I try to do follow up with the sphere of influence that I'll be in touch with them like once a quarter. It's usually more bumping into them than calling them, but I will call. The one thing I've learned over 28 years, and I've used this system since 1989, and I was in a seminar somewhere, and I heard some numbers, and I started putting some things down. And I have a daily sheet. And actually, I just created a new daily sheet. And if you want a copy, Mike, I'll be more than welcome to give you a copy of it. I've learned this, and I'll walk through these numbers, and then I'll spell out what each one is. If you make 40 contacts a day, 5 days a week, that's going to be 200 contacts. So you've got 40 contacts a day, 5 days a week. That's going to be 200 contacts inside a week. If you work 48 weeks, you take off 1 week per quarter, that's 9,600 contacts. If you close 1% of that, that's 96 units. Okay. Now I'll go back over that again for the people who are writing this down. That's 40 contacts a day, 5 days a week. That's 200 total contacts inside a week. You work 48 weeks, that's 9,600 contacts. You close 1%, that's 96 units. Okay? Now, people say, well, what's a contact? Okay. Well, I firmly believe you need to call 5 sphere of influence a day. You need to either call or bump into, see them somewhere, but 5 sphere of influence a day. When you're doing that 5 sphere of influence a day, you need to be updating your database at that time, you know, from there. You need to make sure you got the correct email. You need to make sure, you know, what's going on in life. There is what's called FORD, at Ford method, and it's family, occupation, recreation, and dream. You can ask anybody. The first question out of my mind when I bump into somebody is, hey, how's family doing? Guess what? They always answer it. I've never had nobody not answer that. And, you know, it's just right there, and I think, so how are things at work? I mean, I was down in Warsaw yesterday doing some business down there, and I bumped into two attorneys I know, and one of them was a year behind me in school, and the other one was about 5 years behind me in school. I said, hey, how's families doing, guys? You know, I ended up in a 10-minute conversation just talking about the families. And I said, how's business? You know, that's occupation. How's there? Recreation, you know, it's like the one of them, I know one of his kids is in the football team. I said, hey, how are we going with football? I saw where they lost by 1 last week to Ludlow. And we're talking about that. Most realtors have a problem with the D word, the D letter inside Ford, which is dreams, you know. And I always tell people, I says, you know, once you find out what their favorite vacation spot is, or just ask them, hey, have you guys gone on vacation this year? Where'd you get to go? You know, from that, I've got one guy, he laughs. I mean, he starts smiling every time he sees that, because I'm going to ask him, did you have me take her to Hawaii yet? And he goes, man, I hate seeing you because you remind me all this. You remind her all the time about the Hawaii trip. But, you know, I was talking to him with that. I said, so where's your dream trip to go to? She goes, I want to go to Hawaii. I want to go to Hawaii. And, you know, and it's kind of become a joke now, but it's just, you know, there. But it's just, it's an easy way, because once people know that you're in real estate, they will bring it up. You don't have to bring it up. They will bring it up to you. And then, you know, it is, your answer is critical. You know, Tom Hopkins, it was Tom Hopkins. He was the first speaker I ever heard. And he kept on saying, I remember him teaching different things, but there was one thing that really stuck with me. He said, somebody's going to ask you about how real estate's doing, and you always answer it this way, unbelievable. Because it could be unbelievable good, or it could be unbelievable bad, but it's going to be unbelievable. And, you know, and it's not bad. You know, it's just, you know, one of the things I do, being a numbers person, I just say, you know what, market's good. We're back to normal. And people go, we are? We're back to normal? I said, yeah. Now, you have to understand, 98 through 2006 was not normal. That was a spike, like the stock market. Remember how the dot-com, you know, we had that spike back in the stock market? And they go, yeah. I said, well, that's what real estate was back then. It was a spike from 98 to 2006. We're back to a normal Northern Kentucky market. And guess what? You know what? They go, you know what? I can see that. And they'll shake their head like that. But, you know, on the 40 contacts, 5 sphere of influence, 5 past clients, you should build up your listing inventory. Every agent should get their listing inventory up to 15 to 20 people, 15 to 20 listings. So I'm going to contact 5 sellers. You should be contacting 5 buyers. You should contact 5 expireds. You're going to have 5 in there that are going to be vendor calls. you know, whether it's a termite inspector, a home inspector, or something like that. And then you're going to have write 5 thank you notes. And then the other 5, it could be you got quite a few different things that you could do there. Mike, what I'll do is I'll give you 3 or 4 sheets. I have an 11 by 17 sheet when I was doing it this way here, and it's all spelled out there. Your goals need to be on top of that page where you see every day. The new agents, they're not going to do 40 contacts. And what I have done with that is I've broken them down the same formula, but we break it down to 20. This is what my team does. I mean, 20 contacts a day, 5 days a week, that's 100 per week, 48 weeks, that's 4,800. You close 1%, that's 48 units. Now, whatever your average check is, if your average check is $2,000, that's $96,000. If your average check is $5,000, you know, that's $240,000, you know, from whatever. 20 contacts, and if you're going to do 20 contacts, like with my group, is it has to be 5 sphere of influence. They write 5 thank you notes a day, and I am a drill sergeant on that. That word thank you is the most critical 2 words in the human language. You need to write 5 handwritten 5 thank you notes a day, and you send it to the home, because when they go open the mail, they got all this junk mail, or they got all these Every Door Direct postcards and everything in there, and there's a handwritten note. Trust me, they are going to open it up first right there. But you got 5 sphere of influence, and you got 5 thank you notes there. It should be 5 buyers in there. Depending on the agent, my agents are team agents. They're not buyer agents, which means they can also list. Okay, 5 expired, 5, you know, get 5 listing prospects there. In an ideal world, I want my group to do 28 contacts a day. There will be 8 to 10 by email by buyers. We do a lot of internet business. You know, from that standpoint, Ray last year, he was from Long Island, New York, so he was not from here. Out of his 39 closings, 34 of them were internet leads. And, you know, it is a part of our business. We're still doing that. We buy about $1,000 worth each of Zillow and Trulia. I don't do Realtor.com. Realtor.com in our marketplace is not strong at all. You know, and what I found about Realtor.com is if your local MLS has a public website, Realtor.com is not strong. But if your local MLS does not have a public website, then Realtor.com is strong. I've kind of done the research trying to figure out why it works in some markets and some markets it doesn't. But the ones I have found where it does not do well is usually there is a local MLS that has a public website from there. But, you know, having these daily numbers that you make and you fill the sheet out the night before you come to work, so when you walk in, you are productive right away. You're not trying to figure out who to contact. You know, top producer, in my opinion, is the best actual CRM out there. Is it perfect? By no means is it. But, you know, it is, for what is out there on the market, it is good. You need to have a CRM. If you take a CRM, if you use a contact manager, right, it's a personal assistant in itself. So when you open up your day, you open up your hop online, it tells you what you need to do. And, you know, Mike, I think you would agree with me on this. We make this business too damn hard. It's not that hard. I mean, it's about getting belly to belly and eye to eye with people. And, you know, it's just an easy business. We just make it too hard.
Let's dig a little deeper into your past client and sphere of influence, the database itself. Do you recall how many people are in your database? How many past clients and sphere of influence do you have in that database?
This summer, I hired a college girl 40 hours a week for the entire summer to rebuild our database. One of the biggest mistakes I ever made was I put too much stuff into it. At one time, we were 19,000 people inside a database. It was way too much, way too much. Right now, my sphere of influence is about 1,500. The past clients we've got in there right now is roughly around 2,000. I do a lot of relocation, so a lot of my clients have moved away. And another mistake I've made is I quit direct mailing like I used to. We have, with the new team and everything, we have stepped back up where we're doing the Sphere of Influence and the direct mail together, Sphere of Influence and past clients into direct mail. For my team members, when you start the real estate business, you need to create a database and you need to have a minimum of 200 people in it. That was a requirement to join my team, is you got to have 200 people and into a database with name, addresses, and emails. And we set them up on a one-piece direct mail postcard each month. And then there's a newsletter that goes out electronically. That's one of the things there. Our past clients and our Sphere of Influence, we do not mail in the past that much to them. I'm going to pick up on it a little bit, not a whole lot. You know, they would get 4 to 6 pieces max in the last 10 years from me. I worked on a lot of, I'm very visible in the community in different ways. And, you know, one of the things that we are focusing on, we used to do a lot of client events and on our past clients and Spirit. And we got away from that. We were doing one a quarter for probably 10 years. And when the market turned, you know, you kind of start cutting everything. I went through a divorce that I wasn't expecting. And, you know, I'll be quite honest. I told you before that we went on today, you know, that rocked my boat. I got married late in life. I was only married a couple years. And it rocked my boat. I was mentally not in the business for 3 years. Melanie was my rock. She was my right hand. She was running the business. And if she had not, I'll be honest, I wouldn't have a business today, you know, from there. But, you know, we're getting back. We're getting belly to belly, eye to eye. We've always done our Santa Claus event. This will be our 25th year of doing it. We do the Sunday before Thanksgiving. We invite all our Sphere and past clients and bring their kids and grandkids and get pictures taken. And we have a professional Santa come in and comes in, and we have a professional photographer comes in, and we shoot pictures with the child and Santa there. And then we turn around and get the parents. We push them in there, and they'll go, "Oh, no, I'm not dressed for this." "Oh, it's okay, it's okay." And then we'll send those pictures out to them. And trust me, it's about a $4,000 to $5,000 cost event. The way we do it, it brings in $40 a year, easy. You know, it's a ton of fun. This past year, usually we average about 200 to 225 kids. 2 weeks before this last year's event, our Santa, which we had used for 23 years straight, had a stroke. And man, we started looking for a Santa real quick, and I actually found one up in Lexington, Kentucky, who was University of Kentucky Santa. And he came down, and he did a tremendous job. And I'm not exactly sure why, but we had 352 kids come through in 6 hours. We stayed open an extra hour. And because I'm right there with the kids, you know, the kids, when they're from about 1.5, 2 years old to 4, 50% of them love Santa, and 50% of them are scared to death of him. And so I'm there trying to, you know, get the kids a smile for the photographer there before he can get a good picture. And, you know, the parents are behind you, and we're all making these little funny faces and everything. But that would be a good picture of the self, seeing the parents and myself trying to get the kids there. But, you know, it's but those type of events, you know, any type of little sporting event, being a former jock, I mean, I kind of are planning for 2015. I've been wanting to do this for a few years, and I've just decided to go ahead this year. I'm doing it. I'm having a old softball alumni event in August next year. And, you know, the invitation's going to be out to about 15 or 20 teams, and it's just basically we're going to have a diamond there if anybody wants to get out and play. And it's a endless game, and we'll have the beer and the hot dogs and burgers on the grill and stuff. And it's more just, hey, just showing up, seeing who's there, how you doing, you know, because most of us haven't played against each other in 20 years. But, you know, it's like the only place we meet now is funerals. I mean, I had two good friends who I played softball with passed away this year. And, you know, the room out there was 80% softball players, you know, coming to pay respects to a former player, and we're just talking about each other. And I said, you know what, I'm just going to put this together. I will get business off from it, but that's not the reason I'm doing it. I'm putting it together where we can just get everybody together. And, you know, but it will generate business for us and from that nature. But, you know, again, it gets back to that servant mentality. You know, if you take care of people, you know, you're going to have business.
Well, Mike, you brought up, well, kind of a sensitive topic, and if you don't want to talk about it, we don't need to. But I am curious, because there's probably a lot of people who end up in the situation and could maybe use a little bit of advice. How did you bounce back from the divorce? You've mentioned it a couple times. It definitely rocked your world. How did you bounce back from that and get back in the saddle?
It definitely rocked my boat. I got married at 45, well, I've been single all my life, and a couple ways I did that. Number one is through my faith in Jesus Christ and God and Mother Mary. I'm a Catholic. I'm a converted Catholic, and I really relied on my faith. That was a huge, huge part. Pat Zabe is a extremely close personal friend, and I could say Pat Zabe and G. Dunstan are my best friends, those two gentlemen right there. And, you know, having several conversations with him, I went on three or four retreats. That's where I started going on a three-day silent retreat, and I do one every year since then. It's very, very strong. You know, Melanie sat down with me, and she says, "You do what you need to do. I'll take care of the office." And, you know, I'm still here. I mean, like, I got out of the operation. I had operation on Monday morning, got out of the hospital Wednesday night. I was in here Thursday at 8:30. That's just the way I was brought up. You work. You know, you come into work. You know, it's I took a couple trips there where I just drive to get out and start thinking a little bit. You know, it's when it comes to, you know, it's a surprise, and you know, and I think later in life, you know, always wanting to be married, always wanting to have a family, and then losing that was tough. There is no doubt about it. My Dan Jones, who was my best, one of my best friends, and he was my best man at my wedding, and he called me up one night and said, "Hey, let's go out and have a couple beers." And we're talking, we're sitting there, kind of talking about it a little bit. And he said, "May I ask you a question?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Would you do anything differently?" I go, "What do you mean? Would you do anything differently?" I thought about it for a second, and I said, "No, I wouldn't." He said, "Then get over it." And you know what? That was probably the best words anybody ever told me. "Then get over it. Deal with it and get over it." And, you know, I was at that stage where I needed to hear that. I mean, I always believed if you're going to get engaged and if you're going to get married, do it in a place where you can go back and visit. I got engaged on the west side of the Golden Gate Bridge and got married in Central Park. Being a converted Catholic, I didn't know you had to be married in the church first. So that Thursday night before we left to go to New York, we got married in this church, and then we got married up in Central Park there with her family, and a few of my friends had flown up for it. You really learn about yourself between the burns. When I was in the burn unit, I really learned a lot about myself. When you're laying there for 24 hours a day for 57 days, and a burn unit's not the best place to be laying around, because you hear screams all day long. But, you know, you start thinking about life and you start thinking about why, you know, why this happened. And no divorce is one person's fault. There's always two people at fault. But it is, and then it, I guess the biggest thing for me that relates to today is, okay, why am I selling real estate? Why am I doing this? And I'm a lot more conservative than what I did. We built too damn big a house. God, we built a huge one. We built, you know, you always had a dream of building a big mansion on the hill. Well, that's what we did. We built a 4,800 square foot home and closed on it. And 6 months later, when we started a divorce process, the market turned. I lost $100K on that one, on just on the sales price alone, and selling it. But you start asking yourself why, and then to this day, I will still ask if I'm going to do something, why? What's the meaning for it? And you know, from there, I grew up extremely poor. Didn't know I was poor until my senior year in high school. We grew up on a farm, so you know, we had plenty of food on the table. We had a 2-acre garden. You know, we killed 3 or 4 hogs, and we killed 3 or 4 cattle each year for myself and my mom and dad and 2 brothers and their families. So we always had fresh meat. So, you know, and you had clothes on your back. You really didn't know that you were poor until, you know, until later in life and things there. But it is, I've been very, very blessed. Real estate has gave me a tremendous life. I've been able to travel to different conventions. I've been able to speak different places. And I would never got to do this if I wasn't in real estate. That's why I said when I got burned, it was probably the best thing that ever happened to me, because I have been able to do different things in my life. You know, I would not have been stuck at working at a power plant, and no disrespect to the people who work there and things, but, you know, I have lived a very good life. You just have to pick up the pieces. I remember 2 different priests who were close to me and said that, you know, Mike, time will heal. It doesn't feel like it now, but time will heal. And it does. It does. It's kind of funny. At my 10-year anniversary of being married, it's coming up this next month, 9/25. And, you know, it still stings. You know, from there, but it's something you just have to work through. And, you know, I'm also a person who fights depression. And it is, that is a wicked monster. It is a very wicked monster. And you have to stay positive. The one thing I've learned, Mike, and this is a little bit getting off of real estate, but the one thing I have really learned is as long as I'm learning, long as I'm in the learning mode, depression doesn't get to me. But once I get out of that learning mode, that monster comes around. And when that monster comes around, it can get a grip on you real quick. And that's why I constantly try to stay in a learning mode. It makes me a happier person. I'm a person who likes to share. And, you know, I could probably do 40, 50 units more a year if I just focused on my business and not helping other people. I do some coaching. I'm a CRS instructor, so I'll teach 6-8 classes a year around the country. But, you know, it's just, I just like to share. That's just who I am. But it is, you know, if you're going through that divorce, and unfortunately it happens today to a lot of people, it will always happen probably, you know, whatever your faith is, focus in on that, but also you need to talk to people. Find somebody you can talk with, you know, somebody's got 2 ears. 2 ears, 1 mouth. That means they listen.
I want to ask you a few more questions about your team. You did a great job earlier of outlining the people in your team. Let me run through that real quick and make sure I had it right. It sounds like you've got 1 operations manager, been with you a long time. You have a virtual assistant who's handling your internet marketing. I think you have a courier as well. You have 5 team agents. You're building up the agent side there, and you call them team agents. And then you have yourself as the team leader. Did I get the structure of the team correct?
Yeah, there's one other person, too. We added a young lady out of college named Samantha, and she is a personal assistant to Melody and me. She works for both of us. And any of my pre-listing things, get my paperwork ready to go out on the listing or something like that, she helps me with. She'll help Melody with on different projects we have her working on from there. So she's a personal assistant to both me and Melody. But yeah, Melody handles all the closings, and she's operations manager. Mel also oversees the listings. She's not involved in it that much, but she oversees it. Samantha will start the listing process. Jill will, once everything is uploaded to the cloud, Jill will be the one who will enter it into the multiple listing service. And then she is also one who will launch the syndication on all the internet. She, once the listing goes through the MLS, it gets syndicated out. She goes on to, we have six sites that we, first day, we go check and make sure that the data was pulled was right. You'd be amazed how often Zillow or Trulia will mix up listings. She makes sure we put a minimum of 25 pictures out. We learned this trick. I forget what conference it was, but like if you put 25 pictures or more into the MLS, your rankings on Realtor.com, the house will be ranked higher. Why, I don't know, but the number's 25. You know, we will always try to do 25 to 30 pictures plus. If we have a very small house, say you got a 1,200 square foot ranch, it just there's not enough pictures. Then you do pictures of the neighborhood or pictures of the shopping area that's around. You know, points of interest, library, parks, you know, schools, things like that. But yeah, there's Melanie. Then it goes Jill. Samantha's an assistant to. Actually, I could say she's assistant to Jill too. To Jill, Mel, and me. Then you have the five agents. And then Larry is a non-licensed courier. He does one day a week. He's been on vacation here. He's a retired postmaster. He's been on vacation quite a bit this summer, but he works for us one day a week, putting signs up, directional signs up. Any of our vacant homes he walks through weekly, just making sure everything is A-okay. And, you know, that's pretty much it. I have a lender who is an office lender that we use not for 100% of things, but for a good amount. She comes in every Monday morning and gives us a lowdown on what the market is, and then also does a little 15-20-minute training with the team agents about financing, you know, from there. The one thing that's going to happen, Mike, we've been on about, since 1998, we've been on an under-5 market. I mean, there was a little bit where rates were mid-5s, but for the most part, the last 6 years, we've been under 5%. That's going to change. I thought it was going to change this year, but I'm positive it's going to change next year. And you're going to get a there's going to be a blowback. You're going to have a consumer who's been used to a 3-4 interest rate, and all of a sudden it's 5.5% or 6%, you're going to need to know how to do a buy-down. You're going to need to know how to do financing. And, you know, I would advise everybody to, if you don't know what those are, to get with mortgage people and find out what the new rules are, because they're all brand-new rules on those. They're not the same rules they used to be. But I hope I answered your question on the team.
Mike, that's great advice, and great advice on learning the financing. I agree that I believe interest rates are going back up, and so that is a really good point.
This is the end of part 1. The interview continues on part 2.